Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Monday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Taking time out in this beautiful day, the Martin Luther King Commemoration Day, to begin with inspiration, to talk quite a bit about current events and the fluoride issue, and to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. Today is January 17th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 128. Thank you so much for joining me. I am totally overwhelmed with the number of people who have been logging on to listen to the show. We get over 200 downloads of each show, and many more listeners on the live session. There are so many people on Twitter who have listed me, meaning that my tweets are valuable to them, and many, many more followers. We really are a huge world community. I want to remind everyone that this is simply a study session, and any listeners must consult their healthcare provider. On the BTR, Who's Reading the Organon website, you can click Listen, Friend, Favorite, that little heart, and you can leave a comment. You can also listen to all of the old shows and download them to your computer, iTunes, or iPod, because I understand that 60 minutes is a long time to sit and listen, especially if you have a busy day, and perhaps you would want to listen while driving in the car or fixing dinner or another time of day. So that is an easy and convenient way to stay in tune with all of our shows. There is also a Blog Talk Radio group on Homeopathy World Community where I do my best to post all of the shows, and so you can read them, and if you're an HWC member, you can also comment there. We have a daily online newspaper where there are over 160 homeopathic contributors. When they are on Twitter, their messages, links, blogs, and news get posted and aggregated onto the online newspaper. Just look at my tweets and follow me there. So for Martin Luther King Day, there is a fantastic news site on mlkday.gov25. Basically, it says, MLK Challenge, what are you doing for others? This is a great way to mark the 25th anniversary of the King, Martin Luther King holiday, and to encourage ongoing service throughout the year. It's a call to Americans to honor Dr. King by pledging to take at least 25 actions during the whole year of 2011 to make a difference for others and to strengthen our communities. And they give actually a little checklist of things to do, like send a care package, visit a wounded veteran at the hospital, do some repairs for a military family, serve and prepare food at a homeless shelter, donate to your local food bank, help build or renovate a home. And I was thinking for the homeopathic community, perhaps we could create our own list of 25 things that we normally, basically we are givers and healers and doers in our community every single day. But maybe we could just write a little note, compile a list of 25 things that we can do and that we really usually do throughout the year. Or perhaps we could make a list of things that were a little bit off the beaten path, what we don't typically do, but we could. Okay, I see that we do have Marilyn's calling in with me today, and I will welcome her. Hello, Marilyn.
Hi, Debbie. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm glad to hear another voice on the show today. And I also want to encourage people that there is a live chat room on the Blog Talk Radio show website. So for those, maybe for those people who are not on HWC, they can get in there and post comments. I will do my best to check. Today's show, I want to start off with a bunch of inspiration. First, I'm going to read Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. He says, "What is not started today is never finished tomorrow." And that reminds me of the one where if you don't buy a lottery ticket, you certainly can't win. Except his quote is much more eloquent, I think. So I'm going to repeat my quote that I sent in the broadcast message for Martin Luther King Jr. He said, "We must rapidly begin the shift from a, quote, thing-oriented, unquote, society to a person-oriented society." So more of spiritually centered rather than materially centered. And Sarah Namazi, who is a friend on Facebook, told me that we should quote daily this Hahnemannian saying. He said, "The plain effect of my medical doctrine aids human beings to recover their health in a straightforward manner, but I am powerless against simplicity and mighty force of this beneficent truth, and I humbly beg pardon, as Galileo did for the earth moving round the sun." It sounds a little bit, I don't know, he was in a mood when he said that, I think. What do you think about that, Marilyn?
What do I think about that? Debbie, you're going to hate me. I'm sitting here trying to open up my Organon.
Oh. Okay, well, you take it easy and open up your
Organon.
This
you know, I'm trying to put some stuff together about what's going on in Canada.
You know what, maybe I should announce that we will have a special HWC radio show all about the Canadian situation that's going on today. There is some negative forces that are working, and we're going to turn that whole thing around, just like Galileo said, you know, the earth moves around the sun, and wow. Well, he didn't say that. He refuted that, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to refute the negative forces because homeopathy is based on fundamental natural laws and truths.
Absolutely. But,
okay.
You know, the thing is that the mail that we get from those people living in England say, you better start fighting it now. We didn't fight. And when we started to fight back, the damage was done. So we have to sort of get cracking with it and not let it go too far.
We definitely will. So I'm going to continue with inspiration today. And also I wanted to tell everyone, if you are in Canada, that Sarah Namazi will be having a talk for a group at the Ontario College of Homeopathic Medicine on February 19th. And I'll see if I can get a link for you to that, and I'm sure she'll put it up on the HWC events calendar.
Talk about what, Deb?
You'll have to ask her. I'm sure it's going to be about homeopathy.
Okay.
So, growing old is a mandatory process for women for a period of time. We might even resist aging as we try our hardest to fight off wrinkles and hang on to the physical beauty of our faces. Yet, getting old is a natural process where things are slowing down, and you'll begin to see that the sparkle in your heart and the twinkle in your eyes makes you beautiful in a way that's not achievable in youth. Go through, there's a whole bunch of quotes, and many of them are lighthearted and funny, and you know, when we think about talking about old age and women. So Doris Lessing says, the great secret that all old people share is that you really haven't changed in 70 or 80 years. Your body changes, but you don't change at all. And maybe in terms of your soul is eternal, but I do pray and hope that people do try to improve who they are each and every day. Another one is, take your time, and this is a saying from Woody Allen. Let this one sink in. You can live to be 100 if you give up all the things that make you want to live to be 100. So he is. That's one my husband would take to heart. He says, I can never have all the wonderful goody things that I want. And I say,
I was listening to a show, and they were doing a show on those people who lived beyond 100. And from like there was 100 to 114. And you know what they all had in common? They all, you know, one drank, one smoked. They all had vices. But you know what they all had in common?
They must have had a good attitude.
Well, no. No, that wasn't it at all.
What?
They all had in common that they didn't eat very much, that their caloric intake was very low.
Absolutely.
That was the one commonality between all of them.
Wow, yeah. There's actually a statistic about that. That you really, people normally as they age just naturally don't have that same amount of hunger to eat so much. And it's true. Yeah, the less caloric intake, the longer you live.
Yeah.
And George Burns said, you know you're getting old when you stoop to tie your shoelaces and wonder what else you could do while you're down there.
He is so cute.
That's so cute.
Oh, boy. I think sometimes I think I'm with him down there. Okay, well, last week we discussed Arnim Montana and is probably the most well-known and mainstream homeopathic remedy. Arnica is used in first aid for bruising and trauma, and you'd usually take arnica after a fall or a day of hard work to prevent bruising and muscle soreness. Today's talk is going to be all about fluoride. And I believe that this is even Fluoride and Bone Health Week, which is very much connected to health and hormones at all stages of life. It's connected to early childhood growth periods of the bones and the teeth. It's connected to the teen years when diet plays a part in rapid growth spurts, and the fact that the kids are drinking so much soda pop, which depletes their calcium and in their bones. And it's important during the childbearing years when pregnancy may rob the mother of calcium, and later in life when the hormones change and women are susceptible to fractures, falls, brittle bones, and weak bones. And there is quite a bit of news about fluoride that people are not always familiar with. Of course, we think about fluoride in our toothpaste, fluoride being introduced into our water for a specific reason. They say that it reduces tooth decay. However, we know that there are serious side effects. And there are actually some governmental changes being made because community members are being activists and they're telling their government, their local government, that they don't want their water fluorinated anymore, nor is it fluoridated. And so here are a couple of facts. Also, I want to mention Gina Tyler because she has a whole article on HWC all about fluoride. Fluorides are derived from fluorine, which is one of the most potent poisons in nature. Nutritionist Janet Budgell reports that fluoride has traditionally been used as a rat poison and less dangerous than arsenic, but more dangerous or deadly than lead. And we know that lead is not good for us, and that's why we have be sure that it's not in our glassware anymore. Like crystal leaded glasses was so famously used, but we know that it's toxic. Toronto's water has been fluoridated since 1962, based on a 51.7% yes vote. How do you like that, Marilyn?
Very interesting, isn't it?
And it's
very interesting.
Yes, and it's been 36 years since Toronto had a referendum on fluoride, and it just barely squeaked through at that time. There has been substantial epidemiological evidence now to show that we made the wrong turn, said Toronto councillor, now his name is O'Donoghue, I guess. Ingested doses as low as 0.01 to 0.3 mg per kilogram can cause side effects of fluoride toxicity. However, the government's feel that the accepted toxic dose is 2 mg per kilogram, which means they are considerably above the amount, the measurable amount that is causes fluoride toxicity. Tens of millions of people are affected by poisoning due to concentrations of fluoride that are too high. And you can imagine, we are really taking in fluoride every single day through the water supplies, in our oral health products, in the hidden sources of fluoride in our food, and we really have been, all of us have been exposed to it. As a matter of fact, some of the places where fluoride is hiding and we don't really realize it is in soda pop, it's in juice, tea, wine, beer, in our bottled water, it's even in our antibiotics. In the vaccinations, we do know it's in toothpaste. It's even in cereal, soy products, seafood, in air pollution, and rodenticides, well, to kill rodents, and insecticides. And hopefully we don't get in contact with those things. It's also in things like Teflon pans, our mattresses, Scotch Guard, and then fluoride tabs and salts. So it is prolific in our environment. Here are a couple of ideas to reduce the risk in terms of your kids. It says, never give fluoridated mouthwash to children under 6 years of age because they might swallow it. But obviously, if it was me, I'm not going to give them anything with fluoride in them. Do not use fluoride supplements such as drops or tablets. This is also a recommendation by Health Canada. Make sure that your children use no more than a pea-sized amount of toothpaste on their toothbrush. And I would like to direct people to the HWC because there is a huge article all about what is the best toothpaste to use. And I think that was started by Dr. Wickwar. And we realized that we can use our typical baking soda. Also, can you believe it says, teach your kids not to swallow toothpaste.
Yeah.
You know, some kids actually love it and they just eat it. So maybe we have a remedy for that. Okay, and then it says to choose a source of water that is not supplemented with fluoride. And I guess the trick would be to find that or to most likely use a reverse osmosis or some sort of a water filter that will filter out the chemicals. Okay. What about the signs and symptoms if you have been taking or been around a lot of fluoride? And you have to realize that it is something that accumulates in the body. It's not like we just take it and it gets eliminated. It's over time. And so poisoning occurs following ingestion, usually accidental or even intentional taking of the fluoride-containing products. It is, I told you how many products it actually is in. It's even in vitamins and some cleaning agents. So, fluoride has several mechanisms of toxicity. Ingested fluoride initially acts locally on the intestinal mucosa. It can form hydrofluoric acid in the stomach, which leads to GI irritation or corrosive effects. Following ingestion, the GI tract is the earliest and most commonly affected organ system. So I guess if we're looking for an etiology when people have an upset digestive system, this might be something we might ask about if they're around fluoride, if they're using Teflon pans, if they're toothpaste has got a lot of fluoride in it, or if they're even getting fluoride treatments at the dental when they go for their checkup. Fluoride binds calcium ions and may lead to hypocalcemia. Fluoride has direct cytotoxic effects and interferes with a number of enzyme systems. It disrupts oxidative phosphorylation, glycolysis, coagulation, and neurotransmission. Those are huge words, and it means that our system is being disrupted by this binding of the calcium. And, you know, this is the problem, because we're not able to utilize our calcium when we're taking in this fluoride. It also inhibits some of the other processes, which is partly responsible for hypersalivation, vomiting, and diarrhea. Seizures may actually result from both hypomagnesemia and hypocalcemia. So I imagine that is too much calcium, too much magnesium in the body.
Deb?
Sure.
If I may. You know, I use trace minerals, and one of them is fluorine. And I think that what's happening is that, you know, the recommendation of putting this trace mineral into especially the toothpaste is, yes, it's very good. It helps fix the calcium in your bones and your teeth enamel, right? And it helps promote the growth of your bones. And that's great. We know that when you take medicine, you take it for a specific amount of time in order to help you get better. But when you take the same thing on a daily basis, just think about it. We brush our teeth once, twice, three times a day.
Yes.
It overloads the system.
And it's a cumulative effect.
Exactly.
Because it's not going to go out of the body. I mean, unless you're doing some sort of chelation or something.
That's right. That's why, you know, conventionally, that's their mistake. It should not be in our products and in our water the way that it is. It's just too much.
Right. We are really supplemented by so many different elements and chemicals. I don't know whether we do have long-term statistics. We have some, but I don't know how much of that has been recently done.
Yeah, too much of it. But now the other thing to think about is that because bottled water has become such a commodity, and it's, you know, everybody's walking around with these bottles of water that they're, you know, everything's been taken out of.
Uh-huh.
There has been an increase in dental cavities.
There's we could do a whole show on bottled water, because, you know, most of it is just simply tap water.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Or right out of, you know, our Lake Erie is a huge source of bottled water. So, yeah.
Okay. So going back to the signs and symptoms of fluoride toxicity, a little list is: there's skin problems, ulcers, acute pain, headaches, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, convulsions, paralysis, abnormal growth of teeth, abnormal growth of bones, and dizziness. And its studies have shown in the adverse side effects that a connection between fluoridation and cancer of the bones, lungs, pancreas, and lymph glands, genetic damage and birth defects, damage to the nervous system and the reproductive system, increases in aluminum uptake in the brain, which is related to Alzheimer's disease, weakness of the immune systems, and depression. And those are pretty heavy-duty things. And there's a lot more that I want to get into. For instance, we've got dental fluorosis, which are the white spots on your teeth and the eroding of the enamel, which leads to dental problems, and skeletal fluorosis, which is brittle bones, and that leads to pain and an increase in fractures. I have one huge blog all about Fosamax and the drug effects that are caused by women who are taking this drug for increasing their calcium intake, and it causes literally severe femoral fractures and brittle bones, where a woman may be just simply walking down the street and crack, that hip bone is going to fracture. So there's a lot that we need to take into consideration before we start taking these heavy-duty drugs. And I mentioned that there's abdominal pain, weakness, and tiredness, and these headaches, and joint pains without any reason. One of the things also that I'd like to do, there's an incredible story on the internet. It's a personal story by Kathy Justice, and she calls it Deadly Remedies, Strange Illnesses Lead Horse Breeder to Challenge Fluoridation of Pagosa's Water. And if I may, I would like to read her story, as much of it as I can here. And this woman, Kathy Justice, led a successful campaign to stop fluoridation of the Pagosa spring water supply, which is quite an amazing feat. And that's why I always say one person can really change the world. And this occurred in the late 1970s. Her husband and her bought some property and moved to Pagosa Springs from a non-fluoridated area in Southern California. They were raising show quality quarter horses for years, and they wanted to do that in Pagosa Springs. They were very aware about the clean air and the water, and they thought this was a perfect place to be. So what happened? They had never had problems with their horses being sick or crippled. Their good health stopped when the fluoridation of that water started. The sickness started with chronic colic, and we know that horses can easily die from colic. It's a major source of trepidation for any equine lover. They averaged 1 to 2 colics a month, and that could be really costly also. And it could be any of their horses at any time. That colic continued through the winter of 2003 and 2004. It just seemed to happen more and more. They ranged from the colics to Cushing's disease, which is equine metabolic syndrome, lethargy, neurological problems, chronic coughs, lameness, cancer, joints freezing up, soft tissue hardening, hard tissue forming on bones, deformed hooves, legs becoming crooked after adulthood, thyroid problems, skin problems, reproductive problems, and their foals were being born with crooked legs. The mares were aborting their fetuses. The deformed full-term foals were documented in many images, and their animals were dying of mysterious illnesses. And at this time, really, nobody knew anything about what was happening in the water. They had taken one of their mares to California and bred her to an 8-time world champion stallion, and they brought her home for her gestation 2 weeks before the delivery. They took her back to California to foal and to be rebred. She had a beautiful filly and was rebred 2 days before the filly was 2 months old, and before they picked them both up, the filly suddenly died. There was no outward symptoms of anything, and the autopsy showed sores on every organ of her body. Organs and blood were sent for diagnosis of what killed her, but no cause was found. And no vet had ever seen anything like this. A few years later, they took a mare to a different breeding farm, and she was bred and brought home during gestation and taken back a few weeks before delivery. One night, she received a phone call from the ranch owner. She said, her mare was in labor and couldn't physically deliver the foal. The attending vet said he had palpated her and couldn't distinguish a normal foal. He gave 3 options. First, cut the baby up inside of her. Second, do a C-section, which would require massive amounts of time and drugs, and she would be crippled by the drugs and would never be able to conceive. Or third, put her down and save her from a lifetime of pain. This woman, Kathy, opted to put her down and had an autopsy done. The colt's head was less than half the normal length, with no eyes or nostrils, no neck, and no muscles at all, just skin over the bones. It wasn't until the last year that they bought the book. It's so maybe this is a good book to get, The Fluoride Deception by Christopher Bryson. And that's when she made the connection between the fluoride poisoning that was introduced into the Pagoda Springs water. It refers to the most expensive U.S. corporate episode in history relating to fluoride in the 1990s, where over $1.3 billion in costs and settlements were paid out. As late as July 2003, which is only 7 years ago, the Florida Supreme Court also reinstated a $4 million jury award to the family of the boy born without eyes. These unbelievably strange coincidences kept appearing and relating to the illnesses that her animals were having. They were losing dogs, they were losing horses, so much was happening over there. And she was brought up basically as holistic. Her family was holistic on whole foods and alternative medicines. And she always had an interest in this. So she really made a big difference. I'm trying to think if I want to continue on and read this further or give you a chance to read the rest of her story on your own. Are you interested in learning more, Marilyn?
I think I'd like to read it on my own and do the Organon, I think.
Okay.
I did want to
get you introduced to this, but she did an incredible amount of investigation and finding out about what's happening to the water and realizing that I have actually read more stories about water being fluoridated and not really understanding what is happening to the people in their area. So you can read a number of reports like that. And the good thing is, and I don't have that information at my fingertips right now, I believe you're going to be reading a lot of reports in the news about how they are stopping the fluoridation in certain areas. One of the stories I read was about North Central Province of Sri Lanka, where this area is mainly a farming country where rice is grown and has naturally, I guess, relatively high concentrations of fluoride salts in the water. And the people are drinking it from their wells and they're getting a high incidence of kidney failure. So these are things that we can continue to investigate and be proactive in our own communities regarding fluoride. And we also have, homeopathically, we have fluoride as one of our elements that are used. Another bit of information is that there is a connection between ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and fluoride toxicity. And if I read this, the 200 years homeopaths have pondered fluoride. They have, and this is the way that we've been talking about our clinical trials or proving cases, that they experiment on healthy volunteers to see what a homeopathic dose when they will do to a healthy individual, and then they record their symptoms. So there's a lot going on that it's George Pithulka says that sleepless for many years is also cured by fluoride. It's a little tidbit of information for you.
That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. It says allopaths can diagnose by parts and their specialties, by the brain and the different, they are specialists and they only look at one thing. They don't look at the whole person. Whereas homeopathy will look at the totality. And this says that ADHD is entwined around fluoride. The low-mindedness, the ceaseless activity, the sleep symptoms, the antisocial behavior, the gaiety and anger, stupidity and aversion to family and friends, impulsiveness and even forgetfulness, these are all symptoms of fluoride poisoning in the repertory, in the books of homeopathy. We know, as I said, that fluoride is in our water, our coffee, juices, cooked foods, and Roger Morrison says, many homeopaths have speculated about the health effects of the fluoridation of our water supplies. This is an especially alarming thought because of the deep action of this remedy, affecting the metabolism, the bones, and the connective tissues. So it is true that many homeopaths have been investigating fluoride and its effects. Okay, there's something written in the Townsend letter for doctors. The wee bit of fluoride put in our water since 1947 may be catching up with us and may be responsible in part for our nation being 19th in longevity. Rats were surely not tested for longevity. I have on my skin just those eraser-sized crusts referred to again and again in the medicas, and that is because it's used as a rat poisoning. So are we men or are we mice? We are about 76% water. You know, I've heard a number of different percentages, whether we're 68 or 78.
It depends on which part of the body we're talking about. I think the brain is supposed to be 80%, which has the most, and then everything else is a little bit less. But we're between 60 and 80% water.
Mm-hmm.
Brain being the most.
That's interesting. Well, a spongy tissue. Well, maybe heart disease starts with this water element. And the deep bone pains and slow action of fluoride suggest arthritis and osteoporosis. The antisocial behavior is reflected in the huge number of our young men who are filling prisons, says this article in the Townsend letters. The sale of Ritalin will continue to rise until the cause of ADHD is addressed. Every scientific double-blind study, in the author's opinion, is flawed. The concept is flawed. Every child is an individual. His ADHD is individual. When you throw Ritalin at kids, it might as well be cake. It will rot their teeth soon enough, and we must stop using kids to test rat poisoning. And there was a study done in Grand Rapids where fluoride began. He says it's ironic that Grand Rapids is similar to called Roaring Water. That was an article by Donald Houghton, H-O-T-T-O-N. Okay. So much is happening in the news, and we do have... We have actually a lot of time to talk about the Organon if you wish to, or if you have anything else to say about fluoride and fluoridation and brittle bones and what we can do to assist the body in strengthening the bones. Any comments?
Well, you know, that we do with tissue salts. Calc fluor, calc phos, and not to drink too much milk.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently in the countries that has the most milk consumption, that's where we have the most osteoporosis. Isn't that interesting? Did you know that?
Well, I do know that as infants of all animals who are mammals and give and nurse their young, it's natural, but then you get weaned, and after you're weaned, you really it's not natural to go back and be drinking milk. Although I personally think that goat milk or some cheese is really not that bad for you, but that's my own self preference.
Well, you know, my father was brought up; they had a goat, and so he was brought up on goat milk. And he said that natural goat milk straight from the goat is the most delicious thing. And, of course, we've never tasted that.
I have. It's delicious.
Have you? Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And
because the stuff off the supermarket shelf is not so delicious.
No, it's very sour.
Yeah,
Fresh goat milk is absolutely delicious. And it is the closest to mother's milk in the formation of it, or the composition. So that's probably why.
So if I come to visit you, do I get to get some real goat milk?
Oh, it's a long story. The person who had the goats I don't know if she still has the goats. So maybe I could give her a call and find out. But
unpasteurized milk is illegal here. I know you're in the States, it's easier to get raw milk.
It's actually difficult.
Is it?
Yes. In my state, it's illegal.
Uh-huh, same here.
It's illegal to have raw, unpasteurized milk and unhomogenized. I mean, they do all sorts of things to milk to make it not a natural product anymore. So I found out this little tidbit of information that the federal government said Friday it planned to lower the recommended levels of fluoride in water, the first such change since 1962. Fluoride in drinking water has been credited with drastically cutting tooth decay, but too much of it causes spots on some children's teeth. The Department of Health and Human Services is proposing changing the level to 0.7 milligrams per liter of water. That's still above the amount that was toxic, if I recall the reading. And the Environmental Protection Agency will review whether the cutoff of 4 milligrams per liter is too high. The standard has been 0.7 to 1.2 milligrams per liter. Well, I must say it's a good thing that they're even taking a closer look, even though it's not as majorly of change as perhaps the people who don't want fluoride in their water at all. Okay. So we are reading aphorism number 155 today. And do you have it in front of you?
I happen to be looking at the Brewster O'Reilly edition, 6th edition.
Okay.
So I'm probably looking at a different edition than you are, because I know you're looking off of something else.
Okay. Do you want to read yours, and then I'll see how it compares?
Sure. So the disease is lifted and extinguished without significant ailment because in the use of this fitting homeopathic medicine, only the medicinal symptoms of the remedy that correspond to the disease symptoms are in operation. The medicinal symptoms take up the place of the weaker disease symptoms in the organism, that is, in the feeling of the life principle, and annihilate the disease symptoms by means of overtunement. Finding no employment in the existing case of disease, the other symptoms of the homeopathic medicine, which are often numerous, remain entirely silent. Almost nothing of the medicinal symptoms is to be noticed in the patient's condition, which improves by the hour because the medicinal dose necessary for homeopathic use is so deeply diminished that it is much too weak to express its remaining non-homeopathic symptoms in the disease-free parts of the body. Consequently, it can only permit the homeopathic symptoms to act in the parts of the organism already most irritated and excited by the similar disease symptoms, thus allowing the sick life principle to feel only the similar but stronger medicinal disease, whereby the original disease expires.
Okay. And what are we learning from that?
Well, we're learning that if you give the right remedy, right, that it will take the symptoms that it has. What's the word? It's on the tip of my tongue. That it resonates with, right? Same symptoms that it resonates with, away, and because we've given a remedy in which the symptoms are stronger than what we are actually experiencing ourselves, we start to fight against those symptoms of the medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And that eradicates the symptoms that we already have.
Mm-hmm.
Body can't deal with two things at the same time like that. So it only deals with the symptoms that are much stronger than what we're already experiencing.
Okay, you added a couple of Hahnemann's aphorisms in there while you were explaining it.
I'm glad I have some knowledge.
that was really great. So in the version that I have, it says, aphorism 155, I say, and in big letters, without any considerable disturbance. So it's not going to disturb the organism. It's going to alleviate these symptoms. It says, for in the employment of this most appropriate homeopathic remedy, which means that the homeopath has selected the most appropriate homeopathic remedy at the time, it is only the symptoms of the medicine that correspond to the symptoms of the disease. So we're looking at what are the symptoms, what the matching of the two, of the medicine, what symptoms can a medicine create in a healthy being, and then what are the symptoms that we're looking at in the person? What is the deviation from their normal way of being to their unhealthy or sick way of being? So you're matching those two things, and that are called into play. The former occupying the place of the latter. So the former being the symptoms of the medicine are occupying the place of the latter, which are weaker symptoms of the disease that are being displayed by the organism. For instance, in the sensations of the life principle, and thereby annihilating them by overpowering them. But the other symptoms of the homeopathic medicine, which are often very numerous, so we know that Nux Vomica is a polycrest and it has hundreds and hundreds of different symptoms that it could possibly elicit in a person who's doing approving. Yet the person that we give this most appropriate homeopathic remedy of Nux Vomica doesn't have to have all of those hundreds of symptoms. Is that right?
Absolutely. But the symptoms in Nux Vomica should be pretty prominent, I think.
Right.
Although it's a huge polycrest, there has to be, you know, some prominence of those symptoms if you're going to match them.
Right. You're matching the symptoms of the Nux Vomica, of the particular remedy that you've selected, to the symptoms that the person is displaying, that you can observe, that he can describe. And if that is a good match, then you're going to select that remedy. But we also know that a remedy has such a much broader ability to cure many other kinds of symptoms that this particular individual is not having, but that doesn't matter. So when sometimes a beginning homeopath will ask, but the person doesn't have such and such, and we can say, that's okay, the person doesn't have to have all of the symptoms, just the ones that show a good correspondence to
right.
that particular
You know, another word for that we didn't mention would be keynote, right?
Yeah.
So in other words, I know that the Indian homeopaths, many of them learn by keynotes of the remedies, and they memorize the keynotes of particular remedies so that they can quickly prescribe.
Right, so that they're very prominent in almost anyone who has those particular keynote or black letter or third degree or, you know, very prominent symptoms, they would be displayed from that particular remedy.
And you know, Debbie, something that you mentioned, one of the first things you talked about was that the correct homeopathic medicine, it acts without any aggravation.
Mm-hmm.
I forget the word that you used, but I immediately said, yes, that's right, we should not aggravate them.
Well, I was just reading the words of Hahnemann here.
No.
So
and a lot of and I hate when people say, oh well, I know that when you take, you know, homeopathic medicine that, you know, it's supposed to, you know, really aggravate the symptoms that you have. And that's not true. We shouldn't aggravate the symptoms. If it happens that the symptoms are aggravated, we know that we've got the right remedy, but the dose may be a little too high.
Right. So that's an indication to change the potency,
yeah,
perhaps.
Absolutely.
To make an adjustment.
We should not be causing any kind of aggravation at all when we're doing any kind of homeopathic treatment.
Yes. If you are an excellent homeopath. And there's another point that which refers to his other aphorisms, annihilating them by overpowering them. So this is based on this natural principle and law that you had mentioned, that two can't be in the same place at the same time, so that this stronger symptoms from the medicinal artificial disease is going to overpower the weaker symptoms from the natural disease. And that's why he says it will annihilate it.
Right.
Okay. And the other symptoms of the homeopathic medicine, which are very numerous, being in no way applicable to the case of the disease in question. So it's not part of that person's disease. That doesn't come into play at all. So that's why you're not going to have. Now, if you have new symptoms coming up that are part of that particular remedy, we know that something must be done, that the person might be proving it in some way.
Right.
So he also says the patient growing hourly better, which gives us a time span, says that over the period of just hours, the person's going to feel better or feel almost nothing of them at all, because the excessively minute dose requisite for homeopathic use, because we know in the principle of the minimum dose, is much too weak to produce the other symptoms. So the fact that a homeopathic remedy is a very minute dose, it's not going to produce symptoms as a crude drug would do.
Absolutely.
If you would compare it.
Right.
Okay,
that's what we talk about, no side effects.
Right.
Right.
And if we pull back and stop taking a remedy, then the symptoms will go away by themselves.
If we stop taking the remedy?
Yes, if you're proving one of the medicines, homeopathic medicines, and you just stop taking them, they will go away. The symptoms will go away.
Well, you know, I'd like to say yes to that. You're right. But uh-huh. I do remember somewhere learning, I think it was it Herring that did a proving of lachesis, and he was left with mm-hmm. some kind of
lifelong thing?
Yeah, I think something in his arm. I don't have it in front of me, but I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, you know, in those days, I don't know how they, you know, how
his
long
proving
they
maybe up. His proving maybe have quite have been of the a cruder, not so well potentized.
Right. I mean, we know now, we know now that, you know, if a substance can cause a lot of harm, right, and snake poisons, of course, can kill you, then they have to be proven in a high dose. And
in
if
a
something
high potency.
In a high potency. You can't prove them in anything, let's say, below a 30 CH. It's got to be in a high potency. I don't know about, you know, the dose that he proved. And I'm hoping I'm giving the right information. I'm going by memory, but I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure it was I'm pretty sure it was a snake remedy. It was lachesis.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And
generally you're right. You stop taking the medicine and the symptoms will eventually disappear, yes.
And going back to aphorism number 155, in the end it says, consequently, can allow only the homeopathic symptoms to act on the parts of the organism that are already most irritated and excited by the similar symptoms of the disease. So we don't need to be specialists, because the medicinal dose is going to go to those areas that have an affinity. In order that the sick life principle may react only to a similar but stronger medicinal disease, whereby the original malady is extinguished. So it's not as if we're taking drugs to to make a person feel better and suppress a disease and have to be maintained on a drug for the rest of their life. Instead, it is more where we're actually having curative action, where the person's own system is handling the disease.
Now, can I tell you a little story?
Sure.
Okay. I had a patient, a young man, just like 19, 20 years old, and I knew what the remedy was, and I gave him the remedy in a 200 CH potency. A lot of fears. It was all about fear. And I felt that, you know, at that age, a 200 was pretty good to go. It was really all mind symptoms. And, you know, that's sort of what I felt was the right dosage. And you know what? He had a lot of aggravations. And how I did the dosing was split dose and succussion. Just
mm-hmm.
to make sure that it wasn't going to be aggravating. And he had aggravations from it. So I happened to...
And you're talking about mind aggravations or physical aggravations?
Yes, no, mind aggravations, which uh-huh. is, what's the difference if it's in the mind or the body? It's the same thing. We're still aggravating the organism in some
mm-hmm.
way, right? And then I was studying one night. You know, I have all my books all over my bed. And I just pick up a book to fall asleep to, and I was doing some studying. And in my studying, I learned that this particular patient, when he was like, you know, 17 years old, he had to have heart surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you have a patient that has undergone something like that, with heart surgery, you don't give a potency higher than a 30 CH.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it will create terrible aggravations.
Oh, are you telling me that this particular patient had heart surgery?
Yeah.
Oh.
And
okay,
I knew it, but, you know, he was very vigorous, and, you know, 19, 20-year-old with, you know, no problems. Physically.
Right. Well, I think I've read that when you don't see any physical ailments, you know, it's being suppressed.
Yes.
Because you can't go all by the mind. And so you really do need to have a three-legged stool. You have to have those mind symptoms, those physical symptoms, those emotional symptoms order to understand what is going on.
Do you know that the one thing he did tell me, and that's when it clicked with my studying, was that, you know, he feels like his heart starts racing when he gets, like, really
mm-hmm.
anxious and fearful, and then mm-hmm. his heart starts racing. And that, mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I was studying, I said, oh, my goodness, here I thought I had the right potency, and here mm-hmm. I had, you know, these terrible aggravations, which I try not to produce, and it was mm-hmm. because the medicinal... Right? Treatment.
Right.
The potency was too high.
Mm-hmm.
It should have been much lower.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that is a really great learning experience for you, and we're really out of time. It's been a whole hour today. I want to thank you, Marilyn, for joining me on Who's Reading the Organon, and inspiration in all of the other learning that we do. I hope everyone has a wonderful Martin Luther King holiday and thinks about the 25 things through the year 2011 that they're going to do some good deeds and contribute to their community. Get on HWC and be a part of us. We love you all.
Thanks,
bye-bye
Debbie.
Now.
Thanks,
bye-bye,
Deb.
Marilyn.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with host Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to take your Organon off the shelf and read it.